Pruitt, coming to you once again live from the floor of Denver Comic Con, and I have Joe Pruitt joining me today from Aftershock Comics. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Joe.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So you've been in the industry for a while, it's fair to say, right?
Wow. 30, wait, is that right? I don't want to age myself here, but I've been here for 29 years.
Yeah, wow, coming up on your 30th.
I'm only 32, so.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your history with comics. I always like to ask people when they come on the show the first time, did you grow up reading comics? Like, is that where the love started?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I had a twin brother as well, and a younger brother. We all grew up reading comics. I started reading comics. I learned to read reading comics.
So awesome.
I guess first grade, whatever, I started reading. And I can remember, I looked up one time, figured out what some of the first comics I bought was, and it was Marvel Spotlight number 5, like the first Ghost Rider. I remember, you know, Spider-Man 112, early X-Men stuff. It's just this amazing Werewolf by Night number 2.
Wow.
And my mom, who was a very religious, you know, daughter of a preacher, I'm thinking, how does she let me buy a Son of Satan? You know, it's like, what was she thinking when I was buying these comics? You know?
So at what point did you decide this is what I want to do for a career?
I think when I started reading them.
Yeah.
I always want to work in comics. You know? And growing up as well, my two brothers and I, we actually had our own comic book company in the house. And we have staff meetings and talk about what we're going to be publishing,
awesome,
drawing, and writing that month. And we go to our rooms and draw comics and come back and, you know, staple them together and sell them for my parents for a quarter each.
Wow. That's great.
My mom still has those too.
So from there to working independent, and then eventually a lot of work on the X-Men over at Marvel, right?
Yeah, it's funny. When I graduated college in 89, I knew I wanted to work in comics, and I kind of dropped out of comics during college a little bit because, you know, I got to college and I discovered I needed money for, you know, entertainment and girls, so I kind of dropped the comic book habit. But end of my college career, I had a serious girlfriend, and I would go visit her in the summer when she worked as a waitress at a local, you know, steakhouse, and I had nothing to do besides hang out with her family, so I would go out and, you know, drive around the town, and I'd find a comic store. So I started going in and buying comics again, or buy stuff I missed out on, like Alan Moore's Watchmen or Swamp Thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a big Cerebus fan back in the 80s when I was discovering independent comics.
Yep.
And so I started getting back to that, and there's an issue in Cerebus where he crossed over the Flaming Carrot. And I had never read the Flaming Carrot, I always heard of it, and so I enjoyed the issue, so I started buying the Flaming Carrot comics. And as I was reading the Flaming Carrot, Bob Burden, who's the creator, would talk to his fans in the books, and I found out he actually lived in Atlanta. I went to University of Georgia. He went to University of Georgia. I noticed that he used assistants because he gave him credit in the comics.
Right.
So out of nowhere, I was a big fan. I wrote him a letter after I graduated, say, look, I want to break into comics. I see you use assistants. I'd love to come work with you. Internship, and you don't have to pay me. I just want to know, come do it. But then, like, to my surprise, 3 weeks later, he called me up and had me come meet him and offer me a job as his assistant. So, and actually paid me, so it was even better.
Wow.
So that's how I broke in. And then from that, I worked with him for, you know, 2 or 3 years on Flaming Carrot, doing a little bit of everything, and met his friends and those sort of networking. And, you know, a couple of years later, I was writing a comic for Caliber Comics. And then that career grew up. I eventually became, you know, an editor at Caliber, starting a book called Negative Burn. And I started recruiting a lot of talent there. You know, before I went to Caliber, it was kind of a company where you started a career, moved on.
Mm-hmm.
When I went there, what I did, I went and recruited the talent that's already established, like the Alan Moores or the Neil Gaimans or the Mobius or Garth Ennis and Warren Ellis, all these guys I brought to Caliber. And then I became the creative director of the company. And my twin brother, ironically, became the managing editor. So we're still doing a comic book company together, you know, but this time we were doing it as professionals. And that was going great until the big distribution wars, like in 97, I think kind of crushed the market for us.
Yeah.
When Capital City, which was number 2 distributor around the business, that was half our sales, and those sales didn't transfer to Diamond. They went away.
Yeah.
So that was the writing on the wall, and I left there, and somehow or another landed on my feet writing X-Men comics out of the blue. Because some friends of mine at Caliber and I, one of them, I can't remember, maybe it was Mike Perkins, sent me an email from a magazine in England who said that Marvel was out headhunting creator, independent creators to come work for them, and they had me enlisted, Mike Perkins, Andrew Robinson, Brian Bendis, David Mack, Phil Hester, all guys I was buddies with at Caliber and working together with. So I reached out to one of the editors of Mark, we didn't know who it was, and said, did you do this? No, it wasn't, but show me your samples. And he liked what I saw, and then I started working there. I was like, wow, this is weird. I was a big comic book, independent comic book fan. I grew up a Marvel Zombie. In the 80s, in high school, at Discovery Independent Comics, I was a big indie fan, and I didn't want to do anything with Marvel and DC anymore. And then I also ended up writing X-Men comics. It was surreal to a point, but it was also fun. I got to play with all these childhood fantasy friends of mine, you know. So it was fun.
So from there, I mean, networking and having a real good reputation in the industry, I'll say. I mean, you meet so many people, so many friends, such a dependable creator, always meet your deadlines and everything. Crowded marketplace in, the 2010s, let's say, but somehow you felt there was a space for a publisher like Aftershock.
Yeah. I just don't give up. One thing, after I left the X-Men office, I started a company called Desperado Publishing myself, where start off, I partnered a couple years with Image Comics, did it myself for a couple years, and then ended up at IDW, partnered with them for like 5 years. And during that time, it was, again, I was a rising company once I left Image, and then we had the big economic crash.
Right.
And again, in 1 month time, I saw myself drop in half, and they never recovered. So comics kind of died off for me. So the only thing that was surviving for me at Desperado, especially when I partnered with IDW, was my art book line I was doing, Eisner art book line. And after that, I did about 10 of those, and I kind of faded off a little bit. I was kind of like burned out from doing that. I wanted again to do comics, took a couple years off, working no real jobs, and but I always kept in the back of my mind that I was get back into comics and do this. And long before Aftershock started, there's a couple of companies that me and several of my creative friends, no name talent, played around the idea of starting our own company, a new image, so to speak. And every time we would get close to making that a reality, something would happen. Like we have a financial partner who made big promises, and then when the contract came, it was a hostile takeover. And I was just on the phone with you yesterday.
Yeah.
We went through the points, and then I get the contract today, and nothing we talked about is in here.
Right.
Did you not think I would read the contract? And I called my buddies and said, tell them to go away.
Yeah.
And so that happened, then another company started happening, and then I had another larger company came to me and asked me if I want to do a sort of career only imprint for them. Played around that for 6 months, then that faded away, and basically just when things seemed the bleakest, I get a call out of the blue from a friend of mine who's one of my partners in Aftershock now, who a couple years ago was part of the potential relationship I had with the other companies, the creators. So you still want to do the comic book company? I was like, yeah. He goes, well, we might have some financial income here that we could make it happen now. And then 2 months later, I was on payroll, and it started Aftershock out.
What specifically was it about and the way that the company is like, why did you think in a crowded marketplace that it could succeed?
Well, most millionaires are made during times of economic distress, so why can't we come in and do the same thing with a comic book company? I mean, you can only do, every 10 years or so, you'll see there's a big boom in indies comics. And in the 80s, you had the big black and white boom and crash. And then the 90s, you had the self-publisher boom and then the crash. So it's time for another boom. Hopefully, we can avoid the crash this time.
Hopefully, right? And you guys really do something so different, right? I mean, nothing's interconnected. It's so easy to pick up the first issue of a new series. And the other thing about Aftershock is the level of talent that you guys have. I mean, I think there's a lot of indies that don't have the kind of the street cred that you guys do, right?
I think we're an indie company with a mainstream attitude as far as being a publishing house. Mm-hmm. With my career, the multi-decades in the business. Mainly I've been an independent person, but we got and got Mike Marks to come join us too. Mike was a group editor for Batman for several years.
Yep.
Group editor for X-Men and Marvel DCs, and spent a little time at Valiant back in the day, heyday too. So he brings that corporate mentality of comics as well. So we're a little bit both. And then of course my other partners in the business, John Lee Kramer. So they are some movie executives and stuff, and they know that side of the business, but they also know how to run a business. So John has his own production company. And so we bring a lot of indie publishers or fans, and there's some really good indie publishers, don't get me wrong. But some of the indie publishers come out, they're fans and not really know it. And I even admit that when I started Death for All Publishing, I made a lot of mistakes. Mm-hmm. But you learn from mistakes, and I'm not going to make those mistakes again, you know. But yeah, I came in, back then I published a lot more with my heart than I did with my brain or my spreadsheets. Now, you know, if I really like a book, it might be a book I really love, and I go, well, you know, let me do a P&L, and I love it, I just don't think I can sell it. Then I'll say no this time around. Beforehand, I'll say, okay, let's go ahead and do it anyway.
Yeah.
And then my, you know, bank account will suffer. So, but when we started the company, we know we don't have Batman, we don't have Superman, we don't have Spider-Man, so we need to get attention somehow. I know A. Bring and Mike Morrison from these Marvel, they got us a lot of attention. But, but then what we do, go in and we get my Rolodex, which ages me for saying that out loud, and Mike's is, I know, contact list, and between the two of us, we know about everybody in the business. So if we don't have the major characters, we need the major creators to get attention.
Right.
So, and reach out, and we got Jimmy and Amanda, you know, got Brian Azrael, got Warren Ellis and Garth Ennis and Paul Jenkins. So got guys who had street cred. So they gave us instant street cred as well.
Yeah, and I've told this story to Mike several times. You know, he was Batman editor, as you said, and then DC moved out to Burbank, so he went back to Marvel. But then he wasn't there that long before he's moving to Aftershock, and I'm like, okay, if Mike, I have such respect for him, if he's going somewhere else, then I know I have to pay attention to that. So, and then, yeah, then you start, you know, Jimmy and Amanda, Brian Azzarello, Garth Ennis. It's like, yeah, why would I not check this stuff out? And the other thing that you guys were very careful about early on, again, something I've talked about with Mike, is not getting too big too fast.
Right.
You really kind of control.
So it's smart growth.
Right, you know? Exactly.
Because if you get too big too fast without establishing yourself, you're competing against yourself. Your titles, you know, they're going to only order a certain amount of titles from your company because they don't trust you yet.
Right.
So we had to gain that trust with retailers and with fans. And once you get the trust, then you can expand a little bit more farther out. We don't ever get too big.
Right.
We don't have the staff to be too big.
Right.
So we kind of keep it small and trim.
So 2 years, going on 2 years now, you guys feel really good about where you are?
Yeah, actually we really do. You know, I'll admit, you know, coming out of the gate, I expected more, maybe sales-wise, with the talent we had. Mm-hmm. And when it happens, it's like, that's less than I expected. But that means, hey, let's dig in. And we have to work a little bit harder.
Right.
And so I don't have no problem working hard, neither did my else in the company. So it's a more bigger challenge, but we're succeeding. You know, last year we were voted the Publisher of the Year from the Diamond Jim Awards for, you know, the non-exclusive publishers.
Right.
And 2 years publishing, that's a pretty good accomplishment, I think. And we work with great talent, but we've also helped find a lot of new voices as well. You know, Donnie Case and Marguerite Bennett, who are Animosity and Baby Teeth, our two biggest books. And no offense to either one, though, but they weren't big stars at the time when we started working with them. Now they are.
Yep.
So good for them, but good for us as well, right?
Well, and something else that you did, Joe, that I have so much respect for, you took it upon yourself to go out and meet the people that are on the front lines. I always see you on Twitter saying, I'm at this comic shop, I'm at that comic shop. Because Mike talks about the fact that you guys are also in a partnership with those retail shops.
Yeah.
It's a symbiotic relationship. You need them, they need
you,
right?
They're our partners, you know?
Yeah.
Because we can't survive without them. They can survive without us, but we don't want them to.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
So it's all about relationship building. I don't think very many publishers or companies will go out and do I've done 80 stores at least since July last year. I've taken a break pretty much since January.
Right.
But I'm starting to plan the next tour. So I go to an area, say it's Dallas or Houston or LA, wherever, and try to do 6 to 10 stores from a Wednesday through a Saturday, two stores a day if I can. Sometimes I'll bring up Paul Jenkins going two tours with me. We did 10 stores in Boston in 5 days.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and he went to Columbus, Ohio with me, and I bring people occasionally. I tour a lot with Garth Ennis, and just upsize him. I will go do one location.
Right.
But it gets Garth to his store. I tear it out. The stores are happy to have Garth in the store. I'm the tag along. That's okay. I know that. I don't mind. But it's all about relationship building because, hey, if you're my friend, I want to help you out.
Right.
So if retailers, if we're friends with retailers, they want to help us out. And I want to help them out if I'm friendly with them too. It's like, what can I do to help that store that's in trouble?
You know? Well, and not only building relationships with retailers in a particular area, but also getting to meet fans, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I get to go meet with the retailers. And then when I'm in the store, generally, you know, the owner will sit down with me for the whole time I'm there. So that's great for me. So I can quiz them. They can quiz me. Mm-hmm. I can check out their retail space. I can see, you know, one of my past lives, I worked at Boris Books, and I was the regional merch expert for the Atlanta area for Boris. Mm-hmm. So I'll go store to store and see what they're doing wrong retail or merchandise-wise,
right,
and then suggest or fix it. I might go spend 3 days in the store, I might spend 3 weeks in the store, whatever I felt I needed to be there.
Right.
So when I walked to a retail store, I had that same mentality.
Right.
I can't walk into a bookstore still without straightening something. And my kids, I don't even know I'm doing it. My kids said, Dad, quit it, you're doing it again. Like, I walk, I'm straightening the shelves. So I do that in the retail stores. And when I walk into a retail store too, the first thing I want to know is, how do I get my brand seen? So I'll give them suggestions. Well, if I do this for you, will you do this for me?
Right.
If I give you this, and you can do this this way here, or I can give you a sign here, I'll give you a banner. I've walked in with banners for Aftershock. I said, well, if I give you this, will you display it? Maybe give me a display right here and use my banner. That way I have a permanent residence in your store. And so they hear what I used to do. They go, well, can you walk to my store and show me what I'm doing wrong?
Else I can improve, right?
So I help them too. You
know?
So I think it's been a lot of fun. I mean, I like traveling, so luckily that's good. And, you know, it's not what I don't do it as part of my job. I do it in addition to my job.
Right.
So when I'm traveling, I go do the one or two stores a day.
Yeah.
Go back to a hotel room and my computer till, you know, 2 in the morning and catch up from the day.
Yeah, you're making me tired just thinking about it, Jim.
That's okay. I don't mind doing it. And again, if I know the retailer and I know their store, I can visualize. And I take pictures of every store I go into. That way, because I've done 80 stores. I can't remember all without.
Right.
Sometimes I'll reflect back to it. Here's my photos from that store visit with my notes. You know, so I can refer back to that.
Well, I love it. It's so clear to me that you do it because you have a passion for comics.
Right.
Not because you're trying to, nobody gets into comics because they want to get rich.
I don't mind getting rich, but that's not what drives me.
Right, exactly.
What drives me is I get to do what I love doing.
Right.
And if I can make a comfortable living doing it and my family doesn't suffer, which there's been years when they've suffered.
Right.
Because of I want to do.
Right.
So if I can just make sure they're not suffering and can have what they need and have clothes on their back and food on the table, I don't have to be rich because I'm rich doing what I love.
Right, exactly. Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about one of my favorite Aftershock titles, Black Eyed Kids.
Oh, thank you.
I don't know if you realize this, but I wasn't a horror guy ever, right? And I always told people, I don't really like horror comics. But because it was Aftershock and because it was you guys, I'm like, well, I'm going to read everything and check it out. And between the story you're telling and the level of suspense and Simon's art, I'm like, oh my God, this is like one of the greatest books.
Thank you.
So I know it's on hiatus now, but plans to bring it back?
I would love to bring it back. I have a lot more story to tell. Running a company as well like this, you know, writing is a side thing. I don't do it in company time. I do it on the side. And I as a creator, I want to create.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes there's a time where I have to sit down and make sure everything's running right and, you know, build the company up.
Right.
And put aside my own creative desire sometimes.
Right.
So I do want to come back to it. I hope to come back to it. So am I going to come back to it tomorrow? No, probably not. But I'll be honest, it's got a good loyal following, and I love doing the book. It's the first horror book I've ever done.
Right.
I've always wanted to do one, but I never got a chance till now. And I love working with Simon. Sales were okay. Mm-hmm. They weren't great, spectacular. Sales were better. I was probably still doing it. Probably could justify doing it more. But the trades have done very well. So yeah, I want to come back to it. There's a lot of interest outside of comics in it.
Okay.
So if that moves forward in the right direction, then definitely I'll revisit it.
All right. Well, keep the fire burning.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've got a lot more to tell.
All right. Great. Great to hear. Well, is there anything else you want to share with our listeners on Aftershock Monday here?
I just want to thank all you guys for supporting us and giving us a try. After all, we always emphasize story first. So if we feel iffy about a story, no matter who the creator team is, we turned down several named creators for projects that we just didn't think were the right fit for us or the right wasn't I won't say good enough, but no, not, but it wasn't. It wasn't their best work, let me say. We were always going to emphasize story and quality. So hopefully you won't be afraid to try any of our tiles. When you see an abstract tile, I'll try that and see if I like it, because you know it's going to be something good.
All right, fair enough. And if any of our listeners want to follow on social media, find out when you're touring, where you're going to be, where's the best place?
Sure. I have a Facebook page, you know, just a personal Joe Pruitt. Aftershock Facebook page is great. Lisa Wu, our social media coordinator, she posts everything on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, everywhere else that I don't go to.
Okay, fair enough.
But yeah, you can find it pretty easily there.
All right, fair enough. And I'll put links to all Aftershock's social media in the post, so you can follow along and find out Joe's going to be at a store near you, especially if he's doing the tag-along thing and someone else is going to be there as well.
I will be in the St. Louis area in August on the first stop of my new tour.
Okay, so, fair enough.
And after that, we're playing the other ones. I'll be in Halifax, Nova Scotia with Garth the first week of July, doing a song with him there, because Garth wants to go to Halifax.
Fair enough.
I see some a military ship in the harbor there. So we got a range where he can get there and do a signing and go see the ship.
That's awesome. Now I'm thinking, what am I doing in Jordan now? I couldn't take that long of a trip. But anyway, thanks so much for your time, Joe.
No problem.
Love Aftershock. I'll keep supporting as long as you guys are putting out great books.
I appreciate that.